We are going to be in Genesis 21, and we're going to cover up to, I think I said 13, yeah, up to verse 13. As I said last week, there are an awful lot of, tremendous amount of information in this particular chapter. And this particular chapter, I hope to be able to point back. What I try to do, you know, there's things that's line upon line, precept upon precept. What I try to do is look at here a little and there a little, along with the rest of stuff. So today you're going to learn a few things. So Genesis chapter 21, verses 1 and 13. 1 to 13.
The Lord visited Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did to Sarah as he had promised. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son in his old age at the time of which God had spoken to him. Abraham called the name of his son, who had born to him, whom Sarah had born to him, Yitzhak. And Abraham circumcised his son Yitzhak when he was 8 days old, as God had commanded him. And Abraham was 100 years old when his son Yitzhak was born to him. And Sarah said, God has made laughter for me. Anyone who hears will laugh with me. And she said, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. And the child grew and was weaned. And Abraham made a great feast on the day that Yitzhak was weaned. But Sarah saw the son of Hagar, the Egyptian, whom she had borne to Abraham, laughing. So she said to Abraham, cast out this slave woman with her son, for the son of this slave woman shall not be the heir with my son Yitzhak. And the thing was very displeasing to Abraham and acquainted an account of his son. But God said to Abraham, be not displeased because of the boy and because of your slave woman. Whatever Sarah says to you, do as she tells you. For though Yitzhak shall be your offspring, for through Yitzhak shall your offspring be named. And I will make a nation of the son of the slave woman also, because he is your offspring.
So I know it's a little short reading. Any ideas, any thoughts, any input of what we just got through reading?
Well, it says here that God told Abraham to listen to his wife. So I'm thinking, why don't these what men take more direction here?
I hope you're just joking at this point in time, right? Any other thoughts?
In verse 9, it talks about Hagar's son laughing. And therefore, Sarah says, boot him. Extreme? Are you going to specify on...
Verse 9?
Yeah, it says that Hagar, the son of the Egyptian, she was born under Abraham. Or was mocking. He was laughing.
Oh, right.
And then Sarah says...
It's the same word as
boot
laughter.
Him out. Yeah, but I mean...
The same word of Yitzhak. We'll talk about that a little bit today.
Question is about verse 11. Okay, so was Abraham displeased with Sarah's response, or was he displeased about something else?
That's next week's discussion. I can't go into that one today. It's very long in relationship to why Abram was displeased. We'll talk about that next week, because it's a very important understanding where God is actually doing here. Because I've said once before, like last week, we talked about Abraham and Sarah and this king, Abimelech, right? And remember what God said? I stopped you from sinning against Abraham. So he said, no. I stopped you from sinning against me. That's very important to know and remember that God is involved with everything that goes on in Sarah's life. Now, we're going to go here. What I want to try to put together, a package deal, is very important things of words that are written here in Hebrew that are very important to try to get a picture. And if we get the picture, we'll have, I hope, a better understanding of what a certain apostle said. And we will reach into that apostle's statements because it relates to what's happened here in the 21st chapter of Genesis. Okay? Time's rapidly going on because it gets to the point. I did not go into details of events for quite a long time. Yes? No. That's not what Apostle Paul is referring to. We'll get to there later on today, God willing. We have to find out what he... Remember, it has to go back. Do not think 21st century. When to go into the Apostle Paul's writings. Go into the first century, and who was the leadership of the church in the first century? A bunch of goyims wanting to get rid of the Torah? No, it was Jews who wanted to enforce it. Just the opposite we have in Christianity today. We have to I'm really strong on this. You will not understand Apostle Paul's writings if you don't understand who he's talking to, who is he addressing, and why he was so upset. If you think he's upset with a bunch of Christians in the 21st century because they want to throw out the Torah, he never met you. He died long before you showed up on the scene. He ceased to exist. Right? It wasn't until about the 3rd century was there even thought or brought into after the last leader, primary leader of the Jewish, quote, sect, died, that they immediately changed. But that's a goyim problem. It wasn't a problem of the Jew. Don't get those things mixed together as one bundle. I don't mean to be upset, but you got to understand, put yourself in the time zone, and if you learn the language of the time zone, learn what was going on at the time, and you'll be able to have understanding. Yes?
Richard, don't the two sons represent the two covenants?
Yes, we'll talk about that later. I have to talk about Sarah. It's okay, got to talk about Sarah? Because of her, God is showing us his actions, not Abraham's actions or Sarah's actions, but his actions. Let's take a look at the very first word in the sentence. All right, it says here, and Yahuwah visited Sarah, as he had said he was going to visit. And Yahuwah did for Sarah as he had spoken. When did he speak? When did he say this? He says, had said, had spoken of Sarah. When did he do that? Chapter 17. What is it? Do you know what the word Isaac name really means? Literally translated. He laughed. It's got a yod in front of it. Masculine. Who laughed? Who laughed? No. Not the 17th chapter. We're in the 21st chapter here. Has to be a man who made it laugh or make a mockery of it or make a cynical remark of it. Who?
Abraham?
That's correct. It's Abraham. And God turned to Abraham and says, your wife will have one and his name will be he, meaning you laughed at what I said. Wow. And guess what Abraham did? Immediately repented and thanked God. He knew now is going to happen. So that's when we read the very first sentence here, that Yahuwah visited Sarah as he had said. To whom? To Sarah? To Abraham. And he said, and Yahuwah did for Sarah as he had spoken to Abraham. Therefore, Isaac, who named Isaac? Whom? Abraham named him Isaac, because God told him, you bet that's his name. So all of Abraham's life, he had the look at his son and said, I laughed. I laughed. This is a joke. It'll never happen. I'm too old. She's too old. No, it's never going to happen. Right? So he had a look at his son all those years. Of course, he learned something else. We'll get that later. So you understand the very first sentence? It's very important for us. Why God wrote it this way, how come it's written, why it's important, is because the word says visited. Do you know what the word visited means? Oh, hi, I'm visiting you. Is that what it was? This Hebrew word does not mean visit. Like, I'm going to visit you today. He's visiting her based upon something that he said. All right? This word in Hebrew is translated more of being to number or to appoint. You know, I'm appointed as executive. My wife is appointed as executive. She's appointed. She's been numbered. She's the one that's been counted. The word number not being the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It means the one that's been counted. One that's been appointed and counted to do a job. And so here the Lord comes along. And in a sense, he has appointed Sarah. Oh, what was she appointed to do? To have a baby? You see a picture here, the very first sentence, it's very, very powerful. I'm going to rattle off a few things. You don't have to know this. We have to go into detail. We don't go into detail today. When I get into Exodus, I'll go into detail. Exodus 30, verse 13, and they shall give everyone that passes through among them that are numbered a shilling after the shekel. Why is this who's been numbered? Now, 30th chapter, we'll go there today. There were certain men who were, quote, numbered. In Hebrew, it means there were certain men who were appointed. Appointed. Just like it says here in the 21st chapter of Genesis. Let's go a little bit farther. I'm not going to go too much on this one. Genesis 30, or 50 rather, 24. And Joseph said unto his brothers, I die, and Elohim shall surely, and it says the word visit, change it, and Elohim has surely appointed you to bring me out of this land. He doesn't say he's going to visit you and tell you, oh, by the way, I have a job for you. I have appointed you, just as Joseph's words, speaking through Elohim. So here were the men of the whole family of Joseph, I mean the brothers of Joseph, they were appointed to do something. They're numbered to do something. They're counted, they had to be counted to do something. They had to be what we would call today in modern English, they had to be accounted responsible for taking the bones out. So we got that little theory, right? We're not going to go farther than it, right? It's interesting that this Hebrew word, more places than not, has been translated number or appointed or set. I mean, something has been set aside to do something. Something has been set aside to accomplish a task or to fulfill something. So now we have Sarah. We have God coming. And he says, I am appointing Sarah. I have numbered a Sarah to do something. As Abraham, I told you I was going to do. That's why Sarah is so important. We'll get to her a little later. Verse 2. And Sarah conceived and bore Abraham a son at the age, at the set time. Did you get that? At the Moedim, which Yahuwah or Elohim had spoken to him. Oh, who's the him again? Abraham. Oh, you mean way back in the 17th chapter when God spoke to Abraham? What's he referring to? Oh, I think I'll do this and nothing else to do. We all know what a point of time is, don't you? We always know that the holy day is a point in time. We also know the Sabbath is a point in time. We also know, we have learned through Genesis, when Adam didn't show up at the appointed place, and God said, why are you not here? Because see, the Moedim means not just time, it means also place and specific time in a specific area. So here we are. And so we have to look at this thing and say, okay, the Moedim, God set a time which Elohim has spoken to Abraham when Sarah was going to bear a child. It wasn't just a happenstance. It wasn't just saying, oh, I got to keep my word. I forgot. What did I tell you? What did I tell you? God never does things spontaneously. We do. God never does anything on the moment's notice. We do. He's a very precise creator. So we're looking at this thing on Sarah. And we now know, or we hope we can know, that it would seem, if I use that terminology, that Sarah was numbered or appointed to the appointed time for the Moedim. Now, I'm going to go back in time. In the Bereshit time. Chapter 1. You heard of Bereshit chapter 1? I read it in a different translation, but I'm going to do my very best. Genesis chapter 1, verse 14. Or Bereshit chapter 1, verse 14. And Elohim said, let lights be in the expansion of heavens. Why? To make a separation between the day and the night. So we know lights were appointed to do something. They were just created because the earth needs light. Next thing it says, then they will be a sign and seasons for days and for years. We look at the sun, and we look at the moon, and we look at the stars. We know that they're for, are they there for a point of time? Or just there because, you know, spontaneously God's, oh, I forgot! First day, second day, third, oh, I forgot the sun! I forgot the moon! I forgot the sun! I gotta get them out there. Did you do it spontaneously? Or did you do it at a point of time? Precise time. So we learn these things. We understand these things. We accept these things. Go back to Genesis 21 and verse 3. This is where he said, I call my name my son, Isaac. Now, there was a statement made here earlier. Genesis 39, verse 11, verse 14. And she called on the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, See, he hath brought forth this Hebrew unto me to Yitzhak us. He came in to me and lied with me, and I carried out with a proud voice. Now, who said that? You don't remember. Well, we're in the 39th chapter, I guess. That's why. Talk about Joseph. Remember when she ripped off his garment? She still had it? He came to laugh at us, mock us, Yitzhak us. See, this word's old. So someone asked me that question. Yeah, that's what it says. And it says in Exodus chapter 32, when Aaron saw, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made proclamation, and tomorrow is a feast unto Yahuwah. Remember that one? The two calves? Or at least a calf. And it rose up early in the morning to offer a whole offering and a shalom offering. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to Yitzhak. Play. Yitzhak. Now, so we have one that's used in a negative form, one that's used in a positive form. Okay? Let's go back to Genesis 21. How old was Abraham when Isaac was born? 100 years old. So only about 25 years since he left. I want to pay close attention here. It was exactly 25 years. When did Abraham leave his father and his mother? Exactly 25 years earlier. An appointed time. Isaac was born on an appointed time. Therefore, you go back and you see that when Abraham entered into the land of Canaan, it was an appointed time. God sent Abraham in on a specific time, appointed place, appointed time. Most of us don't realize. We just think, oh, it's just a story of an old man. As we go back and farther into Exodus, you can find out it's more connected than ever before. Well, we'll jump forward just a minute. Apostle Paul stated that that was 430 years or 420 years at the very same time of the year when Israel left Egypt. Was the same time when Abraham left his father and his mother. When was that? When did Egypt leave? Pesach time. The first of the year. When did Abraham leave his father and mother? First of the year. When was Isaac born? First of the year. Appointed time, appointed time, appointed time, appointed time. Right? You get the picture so far? So it wasn't just by accident or by happenstance. This stuff was planned out from God from the very beginning. Even from Genesis chapter 1, verse 14. How much is God in control of? I mean, he doesn't do things like, oh, I'm mad today, I want to beat you up.
No.
No? He has a reason for doing what he's doing, right? Do you know what a reason is?
Glory.
Glory. Glory's glory. All right. Good pleasure. I'm sorry. What did you say?
Full restoration.
Full restoration. You're getting close. We're getting back. Way back in time. Go ahead.
Well, since the Psalms calls us his inheritance and the earth was made for us, then everything he does is in direct connection to getting us from where we are to where we're going to end up.
Where what we were created for in the first place. All right? And then, of course, something happened, right? Verse 9. What happened? Sarah saw something. What did she see? What did she see?
So I guess they're mocking her.
Making fun of her. So he says now, verse 10, therefore she said to Abraham, kick her out. Are those the real words that came out of Sarah's mouth and God had to back it up because he had no alternative? No. So we have this thing called Hagar. We have this other woman called Sarah. Two very important names. Two very important names. All in relationship to Abraham. So how old was Ishmael when he was kicked out? 14 years old. A 14-year-old boy. We'll go into more detail about that later. For she said, the son of a bondwoman shall not be heir to my son. And that's interesting. Now I find out what God has to say, right? Yes.
This is hopefully not a dumb question, but why was he mocking her? What was she doing that he was mocking her?
We will get to that in a minute. You've got a good statement there. We'll get to that in a minute. Because prophecy has something to say about it. Yes.
My version doesn't say mocking. It says sport.
He was... Sport. Yeah. So we're looking at this thing. We're saying, okay, what's the next scene? Okay, the next two statements, we'll talk about them next week. What on earth is Abraham going to do now? When God comes along and says, do what she says. That's funny. Because with Adam, he says, don't listen to your wife. And of course, with Abraham, he says, listen to your wife. Is God confused? No, he's not. He has something very carefully planned. So, before we conclude, I want you to turn to Galatians, the fourth chapter. Galatians, the book of Galatians, the New Testament. Now, before I begin this section, I'll talk more about Galatians possibly tomorrow. I'm not quite sure. Depends upon if I feel it's necessary. None of you in this room have to accept anything which I am going to say. You could disagree with me as much as you wish. You don't have to believe with anything I have to say. I just want to present to you what I see in relationship to Hagar and Sarah in the 21st chapter of Genesis. Genesis chapter 4. Genesis chapter 4. I'm sorry, Galatians 4. I had a G in front of it. Oh, that's close enough. Anyway, now I, Apostle Paul is saying, now I say that the heir, who is the heir? We'll talk about that as we keep going. Basically, the heir, meaning the Jew, because if you understand the book of Galatians, there was a conflict of the leadership in Galatia, where in that point in time in history of, quote, the church of God, end of quote, the leadership was Gentile. More Gentiles than there were Jews, right? First century. No, a whole lot more Jews than Gentiles by a huge margin, right? And the Gentiles were told they must do something in order that they may be something. We'll talk about that in a minute. Well, more than that. Whole lot more than that. Because he mentions it here in this chapter. Now he says that the heir, as long as he is a child, does not differ at all from the slave, though he, the child, is master of all. Really? Well, let's find out. But you see here from the Apostle Paul, it says both the heir and the slave are under something. They're under what? Okay, now, what is a guardian? Okay, what is a steward? Two different functions here now. Two different things. All right? Now, there's no difference between the child and the slave. They're both under this thing called guardian, and they're under this thing called stewards. Right? They're under them. How long are they supposed to be there? What does verse 2 tell you? How long are they supposed to be there? Till what? Appointed to tell a Moedim. Until a Moedim. Appointed time. Did you get that from Sarah? No. Did you get that from Genesis chapter 1? No. Did you get that from any place else in the Torah? No. Did you find any place else? No. What did Apostle Paul mean? Apostle Paul uses such an unusual phrase that he just said, I tell you, the Father decides to do something about it. No. The Father does not act spontaneously. He acts an appointed time. Just like he did with Sarah, and as he did with Hagar, an appointed time. An appointed time. Very important. Now, in Greek, I can't pronounce that word, sorry Jeff, it's really hard for me to pronounce that stuff in Greek. But the word that has to do with guardians, okay, basically, it means that which is a series of things that must be done first, what we call the first principles. So a guardian is one that does something. It comes from a verb. It means to proceed something in precise order, as a soldier would be in a precise order. Also has to do with the direction of one's life. So we have a guardian. Is, quote, I'm going to use the word Torah for a moment. Oh, no, use the word law. Is the law guardian? Does the law do what? Does the law, okay, direct one's life? Okay, so it gives a picture of the Torah or the law. Now remember, talking about Apostle Paul's time, not the 21st century time. The Torah did not include, you say that the Messiah said so, did not include the book of Genesis. We say, oh yes it did. No it doesn't. It didn't happen until when the men of the great assembly, well later in life, put that as part of the first book of the Bible. It was considered writing before. Just history. Unimportant, insignificant, just have it written down. But the men of the great assembly put it first. That's why you have what you have. And that men of the great assembly, their book was translated into what language? Greek. The orders we have in our Bible is from the Septuagint, in a sense, directly. The very name is the same. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, or whatever it is in that structure. They don't use the Hebrew words. They use Greek words. Okay? Or sometimes they translate Latin words. But you understand what I'm saying so far? So And the Apostle Paul is saying something there. Now, who's a steward? What is a steward? So now we have what I call the law. It tells you how to live. Now somebody needs to be the steward to insist that you live that way. What are the prophets? Prophets. Prophets. What do they keep teaching? Over and over and over and over and instituting and saying, if you don't do this, it's going to happen. If you don't do this, it's going to happen. The prophets become what is called the stewards. Now there are two. And what did the Messiah say? Not one jot, not one tittle removed from the law and the prophets. Till everything is fulfilled. Same two things. I say, you don't have to believe what I'm saying, just listen to what I'm saying. Now I use another really weird statement. So even we, he's talking about himself, the heirs, even we who are the heirs, meaning he was Jewish, when we, the Jews, were children, were under bondage of the elements of the world. Oh, well, that's different than guardian and stewardship, right? Right? What is elements? Now we think, oh, yeah, the weather, cold rain, you get out of the snow, elements, hot, cold, of the world, you know, things that happen, you know, around about us. What is it? What does it mean? What does it mean to be in that thing? Well, the same thing, I mean, of a law is something that you have to do. It teaches you how to live your life. Basically, the Hebrew word means it teaches you how to live your life, just as the Torah does. Right? Teaches you how to live. Apostle Paul says we are to establish it. The Torah, right? Didn't say dump it out. He said establish it in the book of Romans. Now, the other word is the word world. It's an unusual, odd world. It means cosmos. It says, yeah, we know what that means. You know. No, that's not what it means in Greek. It is a meaning, but not the meaning. It means to put something under a government. Governmental control. Basically means to take care, to provide for, and to carry away or to take care of and to preserve. That's what the prophets do, same thing. Thus, what is the element? Well, the element is the first things, the first principles. Is the Torah the first thing? Is the Torah the first principles? That's what you teach, that's what you learn. And what is the world? What is the arrangements or the constitution or order? What is the government now? Now, look at our own country. Right? The law comes, carefully, play on words here. The law comes from the legislative branch, and the word of the law comes from the executive branch. Same picture, right? The president is to carry out the law on his side. He doesn't institute the law, he just carries it out. Right? He institutes it. So we have two pictures here. I see two pictures of just about everything on the sun. Let's continue on here. Verse 4. I find this very fascinating. But Paul saying, when the fullness of time had come, when what fulfillment of time has come? It says had come. When the appointed time has come, what happens now to the heir and the slave? What's the object of the heir? Elohim set forth his son of a woman born under the law, the elements of this world, both the Torah and the prophets, and joined together as one. The two prophets and the Torah joined together as one. just like it says in Isaiah. Something's going to take place in the future. Law comes forth out of Zion, right? And the word of the Lord comes out of Jerusalem. Nothing's going to change. That part remains. Right? So what is this subject matter all about? Now let's continue on here for a moment. To redeem those who are under the law, the elements of the world, that we, Jews, he goes to the word you later. He's addressing them to telling them, we are the Jews. We, the heirs, might receive adoption as sons. Oh, really? The Jews have to be adopted as well? According to the Apostle Paul, yes. Listen, Father. Might receive adopted son when? At the appointed time. Now, what is it the prophecy says about a Jew? How many goyims are there going to hang on to a Jew? 10. Do you think that's the ordinary Jew in Moses' time? Ordinary Jew in Paul's time? Ordinary Jew in our time? When God gets them and they become sons of God. They're not yet. He said, we are now to be adopted. He's talking to we. He gets to the you in a minute. Listen very carefully. Why this letter is written so well is because it goes from the we into the you. The you are the slaves in this chapter. Now, the very next set, verse 6. And because you, the one that's a slave, our sons, Elohim, has set forth the spirit of his son unto your hearts. Now you're no longer. Because at the appointed time when the Messiah came, now it's opened up. Both the Jew and the Gentile gets grafted. Now, you think they don't get grafted on? Remember the book of Romans? The tree? And some of the Jews were cut off? He told the Gentiles, be careful, don't boast. For God's able to cut you off and graft them back on. Right? So we have to know, understand Paul is talking about something quite different. Well, let's continue on. Verse 8 now. But when, indeed, when you, slaves, did not know Elohim, you, slaves, served those by nature who were not Elohim. I'm using the Greek word here, Hebrew word for a minute. You're serving those who are not God. Right? Now, we think it means paganology. Well, yes, it can mean that. I'm only addressing this subject matter in relationship to understanding where Apostle Paul is heading. Now, verse 9, it says, but after you slaves, have known Elohim, or rather were known by Elohim, now that you are heirs. The heir was no different from the slave at the very beginning of this chapter, remember? The heir was still heir. But slave was not. At this particular point in time, when the appointed time came and it was fulfilled, now the slave, there's still no difference between, quote, the child and the slave. Now they are both heirs. What do you inherit? What do you bring about? What do you have? Right? Verse 9. But now, after you, slaves, on the heirs. Remember this time of the writing. Try to remember the time of the writing. Because we move it into the 21st century. He didn't live in the 21st century. He was talking to the people of Galatians. Both Jew and Gentile. And he's trying to tell these ones in the fourth chapter, so something real nasty to say in the previous chapter, so I'm not going to go there. I might go there tomorrow. But let's move on real quick, because I don't want to go. I'm teaching at a part of it tomorrow, mostly Galatians. I mean, mostly a book of, not tomorrow, I mean next week. Because in the second chapter here of Galatians, you know, had problem with Peter, right? And some Jews came from James, and would they insist? All of a sudden, Peter, even up to all the Jews that were with Peter, and even Barnabas, began to pull back. And what did Apostle Paul say? He said something very interesting. Remember it was? He says, knowing that a man is not justified, chapter 2, verse 16, knowing that a man is not justified by the works of the law. What is justification? It's not salvation. What is justification? What does it mean to be justified?
Declared not guilty.
Found not guilty. By whom? By whom? The law? Not according to Romans. Because God said, I will justify you, period, point blank. Remember it said in the book of Romans, God is above or over the Torah, the law. And so he said, now, he's telling, because he's talking now to Peter and all his men, you know that no man is justified by work. Peter knew that. All the Jews that were there knew that. They were with Peter. Barnabas knew that. It was not new to them. It wasn't new knowledge to them. They knew it. Because they understand what word justification really meant. We think it means salvation. No, it doesn't mean salvation. It means justification. Justification is not salvation. Justification is entirely different. Entirely different. Now, he says there, now, even we, meaning the Jews, have believed in Yahshua HaMashiach that we might be justified by keeping the law of the Messiah. Is that what it says? No. By faith of the Messiah. Once again, the book of Romans, the book of Genesis say the same, Galatians say the same thing. You are justified because of what you believe. What do you believe? Anything on the sun? No, you believe God. If God says, I'm going to justify you, are you going to reject it? I doubt it. He says, and by the works of the law, for by the works of the law shall no flesh be, doesn't say saved, no flesh shall be justified. Now remember, that's the way of thinking, way of teaching. Apostle Paul was a Pharisee. And that was the basic teaching of not just the Pharisee, but of Judaism period at that point in time, that how you are justified if you keep the Torah. Then you are justified. Any of your actions, whatever you did in the past or in the present, as long as you do, you'll be justified. Not with God. Remember that Jesus said, but the people who pray in the streets, he said, they have their reward. They have their honor. They have their great glory. They have what they want. Really? And he said, they're hypocrites. So it's not doing the law. It's knowing if you've been justified. Back in Galatians, the fourth chapter. I find it very interesting because all of a sudden it looked like he's throwing everything out. I want you to think first century. I don't want you to think 21st century Christians. Whether it is, whatever organization, whatever teaching you've ever, even from Messianic ones who are still Christian in the concept of thinking. You observe days and months and seasons and years. Wait a minute. Isn't that what Genesis chapter 1, verse 14 addresses? Appointed times. Oh, so we throw those appointed times out? We don't pay attention to the sun. We don't pay attention to the moon. We don't pay attention to the days. We don't pay attention to the years. We forget about all the appointed times that God established way back in Genesis chapter 1, verse 14.
Well, I mean, there have been a lot of people who observe those appointed times, but just for different purposes. I mean, there are people who observe the moon. People observe solar cycles. People observe this and that. People have gotten the idea that cycles are important, but just for the wrong reasons and to the wrong
correct
wrong
why
purposes.
Are there appointed times? Really? Go ahead.
Just saying, verse 8 says, you who did not know God, so these can't be the appointed times to serve under Elohim, because this is obviously, as you were mentioning, a different appointed times.
Okay, I want to kind of make it simpler, if you understand something. Try to think an event that took place. You don't accept anything I'm saying. Got to understand that. I'm looking at the leadership. Then, who insisted that no Gentile can ever have justification unless he works and does the law. Right? That included the observance of days, observance of months, and observance of seasons, and observance of years. They had observed them according to the law in order to be, and the word is, justified. And Apostle Paul says, no, I'm afraid that they got you wrong or you got it wrong. Do you observe? Well, I say, inside yourself, don't answer me. Do you observe the holy days, the Sabbath, the months and the years, meaning like a 50-year cycle, 7-year cycle, because the Torah commands you to do so, and you'll be justified unless you do it? Or do you do it because of what a reason? Well, it says back here, God has reached your heart. That's what the holy days are all about. That's what the Sabbath is all about. That's what the new moons are all about. That's what the annual seasons are all about. That's what the 7-year cycle is all about. That's what everything is all about. It's because you love God so much. And you will observe them, not because you get justified, but because you love God. And therefore you'll do it. That's my thinking. Now let's get done. I'm almost finished here. Verse 21. I tell you, you who desire to be under the law in order to get justification. Do you not know what the law, the Torah, says? In Romans, I think it's the 5th chapter, I'm not quite sure, there's a point in which the Apostle Paul tells us that there was sin from Adam to Moses, but there was no law. He's not referring what we think is law in a Christian world or something. He's talking there's no Torah. The word Torah doesn't show up on the book until the book of Leviticus. And what the people, the leadership of both, all of the congregations, their aiming was the Torah. You'll be justified by the Torah. You're justified by the Torah. You're justified by the Torah. This is the way, man. Now, death reigned from Adam to Moses, even though there was no Torah. Let me ask you a question. We're in the book of Genesis, right? How many sins and transgressions and evilness and wickedness do you see written down there exactly what a sin is? We look back and we say, oh, Abraham, you sinned because you did not obey God. Oh, you didn't trust God. You sinned. And we judge people in the book of Judges, Genesis, thinking that it was based upon the Torah. Apostle Paul says something happened when the Torah was revealed. It says here in Galatians, we won't go there. He says it was added or introduced or brought into for what reason? For what? For sin. For sin. Because of sin had to abound. Be explained, doesn't mean it had to increase in more than you normally do. That doesn't mean abound, do more than you did before. It means had to be taught what it is. And when you go into, especially Leviticus, there is sin after sin after sin after sin. Precise detail, very precise detail, including the cleaning of your clothes, washing of your body, including your house. Right? There's a lot of stuff there, isn't it? Now, if you went did everything which Leviticus says for you to do, does that justify your sins? No. What? How do you get justified? Nothing in the Torah, Leviticus, tells you how you're justified. Doesn't tell you that. It tells you what sin is. In Genesis, it tells you at a point in time what will happen.
Richard, I went to Romans 4:13, and it says, "For the promise that he should be heir of the world was not to Abraham nor to his seed through the law, but through the righteousness of faith."
Correct. That's another issue. Well, I'm not going in the book of Romans here today. I just want to get to the point here about the bondwoman and about the free woman. And Apostle Paul says two covenants. Which covenant came first?
The bondwoman.
What came second? The who? What?
Sarah and her child.
Okay. When was that promised? You're getting awful darn close, but that's what I'm talking to you about. It was given to Abraham, the promise was given to Abraham that there would be a free world, a free from this, in the 17th chapter of Genesis to Abraham. Technically, that was prophesied to him first. And then Hagar came second. Just like the Apostle Paul said, first was the promise was given first. We look back and say, no, it wasn't. Hagar was first. No, Hagar wasn't the first. She was the second one. We don't look at Hagar as the first one. Or do we? See, we look at that point, you said, now wait a minute now. Hagar, it says, was added after the promise. But the promise was not yet to be appointed. Abraham knew the appointed would be appointed time. And Sarah is very much a part of that appointed time. Because he said to Abraham, through Sarah, your seed will be known. What a seed is that? Is it the seed of the flesh or is it seed of the promise? The promise came first. I hope you kind of see that a little bit. The promise came first. But the bondage came into activity before the promise came about. Why is Hagar connected to Mount Sinai and Sarah is not? That's what he said, right? Continue on reading. I don't know if I wrote it out or not. He says, these are symbols of these are two covenants. One from Mount Sinai, which was given at the, was given the birth to bondage. Now, I'll ask you a question. Was Hagar in bondage? She's known as a bondwoman. And Ishmael came out of the bondwoman. That's his first son. Well, yeah, it was his first son. However, Messiah, we'll talk about this next week when the Messiah, I think the God says, from you. I think maybe I even have it written down here. Yeah, last verse of, 12th verse of Genesis 21. For Isaac, your seed shall be called. Under the bondwoman, your seed will not be called. Reverse the situation, Paul. He said, now Jerusalem as of today is Hagar. Jerusalem of today, Apostle Paul's writing, is Hagar. How do you picture that? How do you see that that's Hagar? It's what? Based upon the law. The temple's built upon the Torah. Period. Point blank. Is built upon what the law says. And they do it. And he says, that's under bondage. What about Sarah? Are you children of the free woman? Or are you the children of the bondwoman? I'm talking about, Apostle Paul talks about another Jerusalem. Where is that one?
Heaven.
Oh. Abraham, according to the book of Hebrews, right? What was he seeing? Was he seeing Jerusalem? Or was he seeing a city that no man built? What does it say? He saw the promise. Now, the physical city of Jerusalem, mankind, built it. Right? Built by man, built by flesh and blood, built of the earth. The one that's up in heaven is not built by man, is not built by earth, is built by heaven. That one's free. It's not bonded to the earth. They're separate from the earth. So we come in here in Galatians, Genesis. We'll talk about this next week. When Abraham says, this is displeasing. We'll talk about that word next week. And God said, don't be displeasing in your sight. How you're looking at it, Abraham, in the flesh. Cast her out. Let me ask you a question. Will the cast out ones, will they be heirs?
Yes.
How do you know that? Book of Galatians. Slave and heir. Is not the bondwoman children slaves? Yes. They will become heirs. When? When the promise come, and it did come. We think it's going to come. No, it's present. It's here today. All you have to do and I have to do is accept it. All the bond person has to do is accept it. And the one who is of heirs has to accept it. That they too now are connected to the Father. Does that make sense to you? Maybe I'm saying a lot of words. Excuse me. Now, next week, we're going to talk about Abraham and his actions and what he was said there. My point that I wanted to say to you, Sarah is, spiritually speaking, a picture of Jerusalem in heaven. Hagar is a picture of Jerusalem on the earth. Which one do you want to pray for? Which peace do you pray for? Which Jerusalem do you pray for the peace of Jerusalem for? Do you pray for the one of Hagar, or you pray for the one of Sarah? What is peace mean in Hebrew? It says shalom. What does that word mean in Hebrew? Sorry, what?
Security.
Security, safety. No darn, no harm. Nothing will happen to you. You're in my care. We have this prayer we talk about in the services. Has to do with what's called the Aaronic blessing. And the very last statement, to my mind, is really awesome. I wish it wouldn't say peace. I wish it would say, and God give you safety. Because that's what the real word means. When Moses, Yahshua said, if you go to the cities that reject you, take back your, they say, peace, right? Take back the safety. Take it back. Not different than peace in our American English language. Don't give them safety. Pull it back. They worship for them, that's Sodom and Gomorrah.